Is it not working? There we go. Thursday, sorry, February 15th, I broke down and absolutely cried like I hadn't cried in so long on the hole, on the green of hole 13, or sorry, 3. We're not lucky enough to have 13. I was crying on hole 3, just lost my mind. I hadn't even putted yet, like the other times. Well, here's how it starts. Kansas City Chiefs won the Super Bowl! Woo! And that was cool. Amy and I had been waiting so long to get back to Kansas City so we could go to a rally. Last year we went to a rally, I couldn't do it. So Scott is with us. Could you please not pay attention to this next section? So I snuck beer into her office at the clinic and barbecue, and we had a little Kansas City party out in Quincy during the rally last year. And we swore to ourselves, man, if we ever have a chance to get to a Super Bowl rally, if we make it back to Kansas City, we're going. And Scott, you can pay attention now. So it came out this time. And of course, it was the net berry next year, of course. So we are determined. Amy takes the day off. I tell Ashley I'm taking the day off, our office manager, and she, of course, is chuckling, let me do it. And we bolt. We get down there. We're covered head to toe in red. We get down there, and we find a great parking spot at a friend who happens to live nearby. And we get to the rally, and we get to this excellent space. We are I can't guess how far, but far enough. But we were there, right in the middle of it all. It was excellent, very cool. Also, as soon as we realized we couldn't leave our spot or we'd lose it, both of us realized we had to pee. So we stood there for about 2 hours, holding it, and there's substances people are partaking in. It doesn't quite lead to the most perfect etiquette. It was not an environment for manners. But everyone was in general very happy. We were excited, we're exuberant, we're celebrating. And then the Chiefs finally make it. They're starting to actually do the parade. And I see Butker through the little TV, or what do we call it, jumbo screens or whatever we'll call them. Jumbotron, I like that. And we see Butker, and he's got the Ashton cross on his forehead. And, of course, there's Mahomes, and he's, and Kelsey, and we know what he ends up looking like on the stage, and Willie Gay has got his shirt off, and he's just running around with cognac. It's pretty legendary. And Butker's just kind of waving from the bus, this restrained, very restrained presence. He's the kicker. I don't know if I have to explain that. But yes, he is an amazing kicker, and he definitely was the reason we had the Super Bowl chance this year. And I remembered, it's Ash Wednesday, that's right. Pelesa had texted me the day before the church was scheduled to combine services for that Wednesday night. And he said, we'll both do 5-minute message. And he texted me the next day, I'm making the bulletin, will you please tell me what your message is? And of course, I'm like, I don't know. So I just pull up Matthew 16, 24. Let me just get it out for you. But Jesus says, very essentially, and it's a huge text. Well, I probably wouldn't like it in Greek. Let me just find my English. If anyone would come after me, Jesus said, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whoever would save his life will lose it. But whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. I don't like Ash Wednesday, guys. I'm not a liturgist. This time I kind of got it, but I'll explain why. But Ash Wednesday, it's a bummer. It's supposed to be a little bit of a bummer. Because the point is that you contemplate the cross of Christ. And not just contemplate, but meditate, think about it. Try to figure out what it means to you. So I just send this little message to Poesia. I said, I'm going to, carrying your cross behind Christ, or following Christ, whatever. Those two verses, I'm going to give 5 minutes on it that night. It's a standard message. It's a good one, so I'm sure. And it's in the back of my head, trying to think about these 5 minutes. And then I saw Butler with the ash on his forehead, and I thought, man, I really don't want to put one of those ash crosses on my forehead. I don't want to do it, man. It's the same reason I don't want to put a Jesus fish on the bumper of my truck. Because the last thing I want someone to do when I cut them off, which I will either purposefully or accidentally do, is to associate Christ with my nonsense. because I'm full of it. I don't like it, and I feel like it's too easy to smear oily ash on your forehead and then walk around, let alone put yourself in the middle of a parade. And of course, I'm a Baptist in my upbringing and a Pentecostal before that. And we were we had a huge phobia on liturgy and symbols and ceremonies because we take very seriously this little line that Matthew gives us and that Jesus spoke in Matthew 6. He says, be careful doing your righteousness before others in order to be seen by them. Right? He tells us to pray in private, to give in secret, right? So I'm not looking forward to it, but I promise my Lord and I promise my people coming into this position, I will respect the positions. I will do my best to understand them, to learn about them sympathetically, and to give them their due. This church has been here quite longer than I have. And it will go on after I left, which, you know, we'll say 2050, maybe. It's probably a good retirement age. Yeah. But the church will still be going after that. Pastors come and go. So I'm not here to make the church in my image. So I'm thinking, okay, well, let me give it a go. Let me think about this ash that I'm about to smear on people's foreheads and which will be smeared. And you know what's interesting is they call it the imposition of the ashes. This isn't supposed to be like a good, fun, hooray, I get to be painted or decorated with the ashes. I am imposed with the ashen cross. It is imposed upon us. So, the rally goes, does its thing, it wraps up. Travis is mumbling some nonsense. It's really funny. He's clearly drank too much. As he's wrapping it up, I look at Amy and I said, if we're going to ever get out of here today before we get home for the Ash Wednesday service, we got to leave now. So I take her by the hand and I lead her back and we start heading west on Pershing. We get to this intersection that's just in front of the parking garage and the entrance to the parking garage on the Union Station. And then we hear fireworks. I think, firecrackers. They sound so much like firecrackers. Pop, 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 pop. I'm like, they don't sound anything like what I would guess it does. But as soon as the popping stops, a wave of crowd, throngs of people come past us yelling, it's a gun. They're actually shooting. They're really shooting. All kinds of stuff is getting yelled. And of course, I'm left to make a guess because either I'm a big dude. If I'm trying to run away, people will suffer. And something goes off in my head. Stay calm. Grab your wife. Stay put. Stay put. And I start to think. I start to argue with myself. You're not supposed to stay put. You're supposed to go. You're not supposed to. And says, no, stay. But before I had too much more time to argue about it, that first wave passed us. It was just me and Amy and then kind of an open bit. And before we had a chance to kind of collect our minds and kind of figure out where we were and what we were dealing with, these two little black kids came up. And one of these was an older girl leading her little brother by the hand. I'm guessing 7 and 3, Amy, would you guess? 7 years old, 3-year-old? And the older little girl is crying for her mom. And so, you know, I get down on my knee and I say, what's your mom's name? And before she gets to tell me too much, we hear the second wave of people coming. This time from heading from west on the road we were about to go down. The second wave runs at us, same thing, bunch of people. And then I think, we can't run too. Now we definitely can't run because these little girls will lose them. So I put them between me and Amy and I put my back towards where the second wave was coming. And my head starts running. Dan, this might really be a shooting. And you might really not be running from a shooting. You could very seriously be shot. And I thought, well, that can't be right. No way. But then people start running. Why aren't you running? Some people pushed into me, tried to get me to run. You need to run. And the whole time I'm thinking, no, get these little girls. And then one of the little girls, or sorry, there is a little girl and a little boy. The little girl looks up at me, and I can tell she's absolutely terrified. I said, you're going to be safe. You're fine. Don't worry about it. It's probably fireworks. Probably firecrackers. It's fine, you're safe, you're going to be okay. I and my wife will keep you safe. And you can see her face relax. And then before too long, the crowd stops running, and it looks like it's more or less done. And then, again, I finally get to learn the little girl's mom's name. I'm going to tell you Sarah. Let's just say Sarah. And so I start yelling for Sarah. And then I'm not getting any success. Amy is doing the same thing. I said, what's your mom's last name? The little girl doesn't quite hear me. So she gives me her dad's name, who I'm going to call Ralph. And we start yelling for Sarah and Ralph. And then another couple finally comes up. And they say, well, let's put them on our shoulders. And this big guy came up, and he's like, yeah, I'll do it. And he starts to do it. I'm not going to be outdone. He's not going to get to do this for both of the kids. So I put on one. But I think I got the little boy at that point. So he got the heavier kid, but whatever. I'm not counting. So we put him on our shoulders, and we're waving just at nobody, yelling the names of parents. And then the little girls pretty quickly recognized their dad. And so they got his attention, and he came out. Quickly, it was very obviously their dad. They were so relieved to find him, and he was so relieved to find them. They're reunited, and they book it. They book it. And then that was, Amy and I kind of look around for a little bit, and we're still all right there in the intersection. There's this lady, like, 30 yards away, selling hot dogs still. Absolutely unfazed. I could have sworn, if I had cash, I could have put 20 and bought, like, this beautiful, I mean, they look like, I say hot dog, they were sausages. These were nice cuts. I like this. It looked great. And it had like fajita dressings and fajita veggies. I actually thought seriously about it. And then Amy and I kind of got our heads together and we looked around. And there was someone, there were like a whole crowd was surrounding these people, this person, and they were giving like desperate CPR. We realized, oh, we need to go. It was clear that we had done whatever we could. And we need to go. So we started walking. We were going to walk down west on Pershing, or would it be east by that point? We walked west to get there? I can't remember. Yes, west. We came east on Pershing to get to Union Station. We would have gone west on Pershing. And the reason that's significant, apparently, this is what we learned later. Well, I'll get to this. But we didn't want to go that way because it looked like some stuff was still going on down there. So we went through the parking garage. We cut through the entrance to the parking garage where it all happened. And there was this very large gentleman getting arrested. We saw a woman completely still being taken out on a stretcher. And there were kids. And there were lots of tears. There were a lot of family members. And Amy and I couldn't quite get what was happening, but she broke down, if you don't mind me sharing. She cried. And I'm thinking, we got to get out of here. This is not a resolved situation. And so we got through. We're in the parking lot. We're in the garage. People are kind of quiet. They don't know what to do. And you know me, I'm insecure. And when I'm insecure, I tell jokes. Like Spider-Man. That's what I do. I'll thank you, one guy who left. That's exactly what happened next. I saw this guy who was carrying a chihuahua in a Mahomes jersey with a Mahomes hair thing on. And I said, oh my gosh, he really looks much bigger on the field. And everyone's like, ha ha, this must be what this guy does. So that was my contribution. And we got out of there. It took about an hour to even figure out a way to get on the 35. And then we were out. We finally got to pee after 4:35 and 2:10. So we finally got to stop in a restaurant. What was it, 4 hours? And then we started putting the pieces together on our way home. And we realized we were about 40 yards away from the shooting itself. And then it kind of hit. Oh, Lord, we really could have gotten shot. We didn't understand what had happened at this point. There's too much confusion in the middle of these things while they're going down. But I don't know how you do it theologically. But that was part of the difficulty, was like, wait a minute. What was I doing? What did we do? Were we really in the middle of all that? Why is this affecting me so much? Why am I so worried? Why am I so mad at myself? I finally got to go to sleep. I trauma dumped on a friend via text. He invited it. That was his mistake. He was reading pages of text. Oh my gosh, was that what this was? Or, I remember when that happened. Or, 22 people got shot? It went so fast. I can't believe that many. I didn't hear that many shots. Oh, apparently they ran away first and then got tackled or something. And you start kind of putting it together and you realize what kind of trouble you were in, what kind of things had happened. And you went to work the next day. Why? I went golfing. Now, when I golf, I like to walk. I like to walk. When I golf, I like to try and feel tired by the end of it. I'm weird like that. And I was lucky, Dana, because it was cold, and you old guys will not golf when it's cold. So I'm all alone on this 9-hole golf course. I get to teeing off 2, which is where I start, because I walk on the course from my home. I'm fortunate enough to live off a golf course. And then I start asking myself, questioning myself, judging, thinking about what I did. And the one question I have for myself is, why didn't you run? Who do you think you are? And I'm like, well, I'll ask that question after this drive. I drive, slice, of course, it's hole 2. Luckily, if you slice up a hole 2, it's kind of a dog on it, so you can still kind of recover. But I got a long walk to the forest because I'm in jail, in forest jail. So I'm walking up there on my way. Daniel, why didn't you run? That was stupid. That was foolish. You would never, and you're supposed to assume when you hear pops, you just assume it's gunfire, and you're supposed to run. You're taught this. You're told this. You know, you've gone through crisis training. And you held your wife still. Why did you not run? Well, because I guess it was instinct. That was an instinct. And people's instincts are to run, Dan. What is wrong? You could have got your wife killed. Well, luckily by that point, I'm at the ball. What the heck? So I get my 9-iron, and actually, very successfully, and I want all of you to know this, peered that 9-iron, goes over the forest, lands just short of the green, and that's good for me. And now I get to walk through this little bit of the forest. And I get there, and again, who do you think you are? Were you gonna stop there? Were you gonna help people? Are you so special? And I'm thinking, well, I mean, I don't feel like it. I was scared, but I was told to stop. You weren't told, Dan, you made that choice. You need to own that. Well, yeah, okay. And I came to this conclusion. You know, Amy and I grew up our whole lives. She wanted to be a doctor. I wanted to be a pastor. We trained ourselves to be helpers. We trained ourselves to be people who, in those moments, in those crisis situations, don't run. But that was silly. I mean, I'm not a paramedic. I'm not a police officer. I'm not a first responder. I may be a helper, but that's not my criteria. I could have very easily gotten in someone's way, tripped someone up. Then I perceived a 3-putt. So that was a mess. I chipped onto the green, luckily, and so I got a double bogey on hole 2, which is a great way to start, and I say to myself, maybe this isn't the game to keep score. Walking up to tee box 2, or 3, I keep thinking, and you think about these kids that you helped. You keep thinking about them as black kids. What's wrong with you? Why are you thinking and focusing on race? Why are you thinking so much about what's wrong with you? I don't know, I just did. I guess I do feel guilty about that. Why did I think about that? It didn't matter. Because actually, when I saw the kids, the first thing I thought of was, oh my gosh, I'm so glad we didn't bring Ethan and Lily. And then I saw in the kids my son and my daughter. And then I had an excellent drive. A little fade, though. A little push. Landed a little left, but I'm on the fairway. I'm ahead of the ball marker. I'm guessing I had a 230-yard drive. That's good for me. And it's on the fairway. I don't do that. So I go up the fairway. I'm there. And on the way, I'm thinking, were you really going to stop bullets? Is your body? And I said, yes. for sure. I have worked my whole life to be fat enough to stop a bullet. You really were ready for that? No, I said to myself. Of course, no. I lied to myself the whole time. It's probably not a shooting. Probably fireworks. Just do the right thing. I lied to myself to think, to convince myself to do what stupid, dangerous thing I was doing. Wow, Dan, you're a liar. You lied to that girl, didn't you? You told her she was safe. She might not have been. What's wrong with you? I get my 5-iron out. And I pure this one too. It's beautiful. And what's cool about hole 3, it's downhill up until the green, and then it's uphill. So I caught the uphill just as it rolled perfectly onto the green. I was out of my mind excited about the 5-iron. And then I hear, and you're golfing. You're a cushy life. You are married to a doctor. You live on a golf course. You just had the luxury of taking a Thursday off to solve your problems away. What's wrong with me? How can you even be doing this? And then I start getting to the green. I remember the story from when I was young, very young. It's one of my first memories. When I was growing up, I was raised in very hard church settings. I say hard, I mean intense. Pentecostal, charismatic. And I loved the cross of Christ. When I first started going back to public school, we had a quick essay. It was my first assignment. I had gone in the middle of the year. The teacher said, all right, class, I think we're in third grade. So she says, write an essay, whatever an essay means for third grader, I suppose, on your hero. Well, Timmy does Superman. I guess Patrick does whoever was big in football. Was it Dan Marino at that time? And we're in Florida, so that's likely. And I do Jesus. And I don't just do Jesus. I bring companion literature, some art, a crayon drawing of Jesus bleeding and crying on the cross. A third grader brings this portrait he drew of this mangled Palestinian Jew being executed by the Roman state. In the throes of his most desperate time, this third grader, with crayons, drew that. And so I gave my little story and I preached the gospel. What I thought you did. People just loved Jesus. I was not that. Because I had always been in environments where that was welcomed and encouraged. How else does a third grader get in his brain than if he shows this execution portrait? People will clap because he's been in those situations, those environments where he was taught. This is a hero. This is a good man that you should be like. When I gave that picture, and I read that essay, and the third grade teacher got to my level, and I'm sure in her mind and in her demeanor, she was doing her best to say something difficult to a little kid. But in my mind, she pushed venom through her yellow teeth with her tongue, and she scathingly said to me, "You can never do this again." That's how I remember this. As this cruel woman saying, "You can't celebrate Jesus, you can't love Jesus. You can't do that again." I don't know what she actually said. Third graders aren't great. I don't remember. I'm sure I distorted that memory. I cried so hard. They had to take me home that day. I could not be consoled. It was the first time praising Jesus got me in trouble. Why? It shattered me. Why do I remember that on the way? Then I hear my Facebook tone, you know that tone a Facebook messenger does? And I pull out the phone and I've got an instant message. And I'm thinking, Dan, this is not the day. So we'll just look at it. It's mom. It's their mom. We knew dad made it. I hadn't known if mom had made it. In fact, when dad was talking to us, he made it pretty seem like they were right there. If we were close, they were right there. The little girls had run away from the middle of this thing. And all night, all morning, what happened to mom? Is she okay? Gosh, I hope she's okay. Praying for her. Is mom okay? And there she is. She's okay. We saw, of course, and we found her on Facebook, and we had to know. So we sent her a message. And she thanked me for helping her little kids. And she invited us to lunch. And I lost it. I lost it. I absolutely lost it. I actually was trying to hide. I know the Scots can probably see hole three from where they live. I just pictured Dana out there with binoculars watching golf every time I'm out there. Yeah, all right. Not that good, he says. Well, that's comforting. But I was so embarrassed. At some point, I realized that something cathartic and important was happening. So I let myself just go. I let myself just pray. And when I get to these points, I have a way I pray that really helps me out. Maybe it'll help you out, so I'm going to go into detail a little bit. I find the name for the emotion I'm feeling. Because I have it, I just need to name it. And then I bring it to God. And the image I have in my head of this moment in prayer is kind of like I look through a pool. I'm at the edge of a pool, looking into the water. And you know how your kid used to dive after to find things in the pool? That's kind of how I feel like this prayer goes. I'm with God on the shore or on the side of the pool, and I look in, and I can see something fragmented and refracted. And it looks like anger. And that surprised the heck out of me. That can't be anger down there. So I dive in, and under there, it looks like anger, you know, but my eyes are open in the pool, I suppose, so I have to bring it up to the Lord. And then by the time I hand it to him, I said, yeah, I'm angry. I'm mad. And I'm mad at you. And then I thought I'd lost it before. This time I truly lost it. That weird, nasty, ugly cry that you hope no one can see you do. And the whole time I am thinking, why do you get to cry? You weren't even that close. I'm not even thinking about that anymore. Why are you thinking? It's okay, I'm continuing. I said, what kind of God are you? Who do you think you are? Who goes to a little kid? What God gets crucified? Gets himself crucified. And from that mangled throne, bleeding and twisted, himself crying, my God, why have you forsaken me? How dare you look at me, a kid, and say, join me up here. Why would you do that? That almost got me killed. That almost got my wife killed. I trained away that instinct to run because I wanted to join you on that cross. My whole life, the cross has been an aspiration. Not just a ticket out of hell, but an invitation to join your own self-denial. What does Jesus say? If any of you would come after me, pick up your cross and follow me. Deny yourself, pick up your cross daily, Luke says, and follow me. I said, but that's not right. I had no business not running. I had no moment in there. He said, if I were a mother, separated from her children, in the middle of a shooting, if my children ran off to the care of an ER doctor and a pastor, I would say that was God. If I were you, Dan, I would let yourself be grateful. That worked in a weird way. I said, well, am I going to tell my people they shouldn't run when they're shooting? No, idiot, that's not the point. He never talked to me that way. That's how it felt. I was really beaten up on myself. And finally he said, Daniel, you did okay. Let yourself feel that way. And I just died. And that was what I needed. My little trauma trial, hold three. Someone taught me about the cross. Three-year-olds don't come up with that stuff. Someone gave me the name of Jesus. Someone taught me that the cross is aspirational. Not just simply something we believe in to go to heaven, but something we aspire to bring heaven here. I want to read that verse again, Acts 4. John answered them, "Whether it is right in the sight of God to listen to you rather than to God, you must judge, for we cannot but speak of what we have seen and heard." Earlier, verse 13, when they saw the boldness of Peter and John and perceived that they were uneducated, common men, they were astonished. At what? The erudition? The vocabulary? That they were articulate? No, what does it say? The boldness of Peter and John. The courage before these men who wanted to kill them for the name of Jesus. That astonished them. Where did these nobodies get the gall to stand up to us elites? They were astonished and they took note. You take note today that they had been with Jesus. Why is the cross so important? I thought I had a really rough day that day. And then I came home. And I learned. I had to ask people to tell me because it was clear something had happened. And no one wanted to share with me because of what I had already gone through. When I learned two young men shot each other, apparently, in the park, at Carrollton. You know, there was some plausibility for me, being in a rally of a million people, that at least two idiots would kill each other, or try to kill each other. There's something plausible for that. Shootings happen. You know, that's a risk that you know to take and calculate. But two young men, in this small little town, what happened? I don't know. But that wasn't the first time the enemy was at the gates and the young lives of these men. We have an enemy, and his name is Satan. I believe it's Satan. He is real. When I think of Satan, I don't just think about this spandex wearing weirdo with a mustache, a little Halloween costume horns. I don't know what he is. I don't understand what kind of thing he is. I don't even know if he's a person. I don't even know if it's right to call him a he. But he's real. And he and his minions and his forces are very much at work to create pressure in our world to drive us away from God. Through lies, through greed, through violence. Breathing threats. You know what he reminds me of is a dictator. The greatest, the most powerful dictators get that way because they're extremely good at dividing people and creating terror, fear. If you speak up against corruption, you will go to jail, you will be disappeared, and your family. In North Korea, if you are adjacent to someone who's adjacent to something the regime may not like, you will end up in a work camp. Stay in line. It's true in Russia. This week a man died, a guy named Alexei Navalny. Alone in an Arctic prison, he died. His mom has been asking for his body. It hasn't been released to her. They won't. What was this man's crime? Not clear. Not clear. But we do know that Putin had tried to kill him numerous times before. He had one interview that really stuck out to me, that was brought to me, that I really appreciated hearing. He was so sure, so ready to die. And you hear about these guys who are like this. Guys like Dietrich Bonhoeffer, who face evil, powerful evil. Guys like Martin Luther King Jr. All of these dudes have made their peace from the fact that their commitment and their passion to a better world was going to get them killed. Someone had told Navalny, well, if you get killed, what message do you have for Russians? And the translation ends up being, do not fear, do not be afraid, because our fear is their power. Jesus shows us this. What is courage? Where does the boldness come from? We are so unwilling as Christians to stain our hands with what this world is that it threatens the world as it is. And so it lashes back at us, seeks to destroy us. And the only hope we have to unite the world against the evil, to stand up strong, is to be willing to be destroyed. Why would we ever be willing to let this world destroy us? Because Christ is alive. Can I say it again? Christ is alive! They can kill you. They can kill me. But the knowledge that Jesus Christ is alive shows us powerfully that the last word is not, I got it. Satan must have thought he had something on Jesus. Satan must have been so sure, I got him. He's dead. His followers are scared. All of his message is slandered and stained with this embarrassing scandal. And then on the third day, he rises. And for 2,000 years, the name of Jesus has become the name associated with the largest movement of human well-being and human flourishing in world history. A lot of people forget that missionaries initially weren't allowed into India by English colonialists. And why is that? Because the missionaries would come into town, see how the indigenous people are being treated, and what? Preach against it. Causing all kinds of problems for this imperial government, exploiting and burdening people who had every right to live in their own land and flourish. Where Christ goes, where his name is preached, the enemy is scared, and he will fight. And in this town, he will do that. In your life, he will do it. And you will need courage for every day to pick up a cross and follow Jesus. This is why I only have given my life to the gospel and spreading the gospel. You notice I haven't mentioned gun control. You notice I haven't mentioned a political response. You notice I haven't mentioned a funding for schools or a way to arm more cops. Because I don't think it matters. Take the guns away, we'll all just kill each other with knives. The difference between the gun and the knife that's worth noting is that it's definitely easier to kill with a gun. But we're still killers at heart. And we are turned that way by a world driven by fear. That if we let the light of the gospel shine, It will lose everything, and it will. It takes courage. I'll close with this. When they saw the boldness of Peter and John, and perceived that they were uneducated, common men, they were astonished. And they recognized that they had been with Jesus. Amen. I have held you way too long. Let's go straight to communion. We'll set the table with the hymn. We'll trade.